Welcome to the Deep Dive, where we take a stack of your sources and, well, we pull out the most important bits of knowledge and insight. Our goal here is really to give you that shortcut to being genuinely well-informed, maybe with some surprising facts thrown in that, you know, stick with you. Today, we're diving into a really quite a groundbreaking book, The Atlas of the Real World. It's by Daniel Dorling, Mark Newman, and Anna Barford. Mm. And our mission really is to challenge how you understand global geography and, well, human realities too. If you think you know what the world map looks like, maybe think again.
That's exactly right. This isn't just, you know, another atlas full of standard maps. This deep dive is going to show you how those traditional maps, the ones based on land area, can actually be really misleading. They often hide some pretty important truths about wealth, population, health, all those big global systems we're part of. Get ready for a few aha moments, definitely, as we explore how this book basically forces us to redraw our mental maps of the world.
Okay, so let's dig into that. This core idea that makes the Atlas of the Real World such a, well, a game changer. The main argument is that our usual maps, the ones sizing countries just by physical land,
yeah,
they're actually pretty bad at helping us understand how human experiences, resources, social stuff, how that's all really distributed.
Exactly. The key insight is all about something called cartograms, which is a brilliant idea, really. Yeah. These are maps where the size of a country isn't based on its land area anymore, but on some specific data point, like population or GDP or something else. So it makes you ask this really big question. What would the world look like if our maps showed human realities instead of just, you know, physical geography?
And what's so striking, I think, is how it makes really complex global data feel instantly understandable, almost visceral. You imagine seeing, say, Bangladesh suddenly look enormous on a map showing population density.
Right.
While these huge countries, geographically speaking, like Canada or Russia, they just shrink right down if you map them by maybe economic output. Mm. It's just a really powerful way to turn dry statistics into something you can feel, something emotionally impactful. And it makes it super relevant to how we actually see the world today.
And, you know, behind this totally new way of seeing the world is this really interesting team. It's quite interdisciplinary. You've got Daniel Dorling. He's a well-known British social geographer at Oxford, big on social inequality and really innovative ways to visualize data. Then there's Mark Newman. He's actually a physicist, a distinguished one, and a complex systems researcher over at the University of Michigan. He's the brains behind the sophisticated algorithms they needed to actually create these complex cartograms. So he brings the mathematical muscle, if you like. And rounding out the team is Anna Barford, who's another social geographer. Her specialty is more in demographic analysis and global development issues.
That team makeup is fascinating, isn't it? A social geographer, a physicist, another social geographer. How does that specific mix, that interdisciplinary approach, give the Atlas its sort of unique authority compared to, say, just traditional map makers?
Oh, it's absolutely crucial. This isn't just a group drawing maps. It's really a blend of, well, critical social geography, cutting edge data science, and a real focus on human development. That combination lets them not just show the data accurately, which is art enough, but also interpret what it means socially, its impact. They're not just presenting numbers. They're essentially telling stories with a new visual language, narrating the real state of humanity, you could say. Their different backgrounds ensure both the mathematical integrity and the deep social relevance of the whole project.
That's a great way to put it, storytelling with a new visual language.
Right.
The Atlas of the Real World really does reimagine what an atlas can even be. It goes way beyond just looking up places. Its main purpose, really, is to make all these invisible patterns, social, economic, demographic, suddenly visible, tangible even, through these really innovative mapping techniques. It just completely dismantles that familiar world map, the one we all grew up with, which, as the book argues, can be pretty deceptive.
It really does take you on a kind of journey. You start with the world you think you know, right? Then, bit by bit, you see how incredibly different it looks when you view it through the lens of human experience. And the book covers a huge amount of ground, over 300 different indicators, apparently. Everything from basic population numbers to really complex social issues, it builds up this incredibly comprehensive and sometimes challenging picture of, well, human civilization today.
And what's really great is that it seems designed for almost anyone. You know, policymakers, sure. Yeah. Educators, researchers, definitely. But also just any curious person who wants to look past the headlines and really get a handle on global dynamics, it manages to be accessible but still scientifically rigorous.
Which makes it both a useful reference and, honestly, a pretty eye-opening experience. The book cleverly starts off by kind of critiquing those standard maps we all know so well. Before it introduces the ingenious method behind the cartograms, it makes the point right away that even making a map, which seems neutral, is actually, in many ways, inherently political. It reflects certain choices, certain priorities. And then, boom, the revelations start with the cartograms themselves. One of the sections that really jumps out is the one on population. Just picture this. You see China and India suddenly inflate on the map. They become these dominant global landmasses, making up, what, over a third of the world's territory together? And then these huge countries like Russia, Canada, Australia, geographically vast, they just shrink down to these thin little slivers, almost disappear.
That visual is just so stark, isn't it? Asia becoming the center of the world population-wise. What does that kind of fundamental shift force us to rethink about global priorities, maybe, or even just our own mental maps of influence?
Well, it immediately pulls you away from seeing the world based on land toward seeing it based on people or human-centric view. It forces you to think about where most human lives are actually lived, where the biggest human needs are, the biggest potentials. And you also see, for instance, Africa just ballooning in maps showing population growth. It visualizes its future demographic weight really clearly, while places like Europe and Japan shrink right down, showing the challenges they face with aging populations, lower birth rates. It's not just numbers on a page. It's like seeing the future unfold visually.
Then you get to wealth and poverty. And wow, that's just an incredibly dramatic picture of global inequality. You see maps sized by GDP in North America, Europe, East Asia. They just look like these bloated giants, right? Taking up this huge chunk in the global economic space.
Mm-hmm.
While much of Africa and South America seem to almost shrivel up in comparison.
But then, and this is where it gets really powerful, you flip the script. You look at a map showing people living in poverty. And the whole world just inverts. Suddenly, India, China, much of Africa, they become enormous, visually showing where the vast majority of human struggle is concentrated, while those wealthy nations, they become tiny, almost insignificant specks on that particular map. It makes those abstract economic numbers just hit you differently. You see this huge visual gap between where the wealth is and where the poverty is.
And in the section on health and well-being, the differences are just as stark, often quite heartbreaking, actually.
Mm-hmm.
You see countries like Japan swell up massively when mapped by life expectancy, visually representing those longer, healthier lives, while many nations in sub-Saharan Africa almost vanish.
Yeah.
It's such a brutal picture of the inequality in just the basic right to a long, healthy life.
Absolutely. And those infant mortality maps, they're tragic. Africa and South Asia become enormous on those maps. And it's not just data points. It's a really stark visual representation of where the overwhelming majority of childhood deaths are happening globally. It manages to humanize those statistics in a way that, you know, traditional charts or maps just can't. It forces you to confront these disparities.
The part on resources and consumption feels incredibly important, especially if you're thinking about the planet's future.
Yeah.
Maps showing oil and energy consumption, for example. North America, Europe, East Asia look massive. Just overwhelming presences on the map. Then you look at carbon emissions maps, and again, it reveals that the historically industrialized nations are these colossal contributors to greenhouse gases. Just huge.
And what's really disturbing about those consumption maps, I think, is how clearly they show the core of environmental injustice. It's not just a number anymore. It's this undeniable visual argument about who's driving consumption and who's most vulnerable. The places consuming the most are often geographically very far from the places suffering the worst consequences, like, say, from climate change. How do you think seeing a map like that might change how a policymaker maybe thinks about climate action?
It almost has to force some kind of reckoning, doesn't it? It makes the arguments around environmental justice visually undeniable. It really pushes you to think about responsibility and accountability in a much more immediate way, I think.
And then finally, the book looks into things like communication and connections. It highlights the digital divide, showing where internet users are clustered again, revealing those familiar patterns of global inequality and access to information. And in conflict and cooperation, there's a map of military spending, where the United States is just this enormous presence, bigger than the next several countries put together. But then you look at maps of refugees, and it really turns common narratives upside down. It powerfully shows that it's often the poorer countries next to conflict zones that bear the biggest burden of displacement. They swell to the largest sizes on that map.
So moving beyond just the stunning visuals themselves, what would you say are the bigger picture themes, the main messages the authors are trying to get across with these amazing cartograms?
Well, one absolutely fundamental theme is that how we see the world geographically shapes how we understand it socially. Our geographic perception directly influences how we grasp social problems and therefore how we think about solving them. If your mental map is skewed, your understanding is likely skewed too.
And it also makes a really strong case for a human-centered geography, right? The authors seem to argue that the most important thing about the planet isn't the landmass or the borders. It's the people. Where they live, what they go through, how they connect.
Absolutely. Another key message is that global inequality basically needs new ways of being visualized. When you show wealth distribution using these cartograms, the visual punch makes abstract numbers feel personal, meaningful. It helps explain maybe why getting real policy action on global disparities has been so difficult. You can literally see the imbalance.
And it also does a great job highlighting that crucial disconnect we talked about between consumption and consequence. Those carbon emission maps, for example, they don't just show data. They powerfully illustrate that the nations most responsible for the climate crisis are often geographically and economically distant from the ones most vulnerable.
Right. And the whole approach really drives home the point that data visualization, when it's used this creatively, can actually be a really democratic tool. It makes complicated information accessible to more people, and it challenges those old power narratives, narratives often rooted in, you know, colonial ways of mapping the world.
You know, while the Atlas of the Real World is so visual, it's really built on some incredibly insightful ideas, ideas that stick with you long after you put the book down. What are some of those core statements or concepts that really resonated with you?
One that really sums up their whole argument, I think, is all maps lie, but some maps lie more than others. It's a bit provocative, isn't it? But it reminds you that every single map involves choices, involves biases. And maybe we should choose biases that actually help human understanding and social justice rather than just reinforcing old power structures.
That's a really potent way to think about it. It's not about finding the perfect neutral map, because maybe that doesn't exist. It's about choosing the map that tells the most honest story for what you're trying to understand.
Exactly. And another really powerful idea they put forward is when you look at the world sized by land area, you see the world as colonizers saw it. When you look at the world sized by population, you see the world as it is lived. That contrast is just so stark. It pits territorial control against the actual lived experience of humanity. It completely flips your perspective.
That really hits home, doesn't it? About the politics embedded even in seemingly neutral maps. And then there's this final thought, which actually offers a bit of hope. The geography of inequality is not natural. It is created by human choices and can be changed by different choices. It really stresses that these global gaps, these disparities, they aren't inevitable. They're the outcome of systems humans created, and so they can be changed, transformed.
And the insights from this atlas, they have really significant real-world applications in so many areas. For policymakers, seeing data mapped this way could show precisely where things like medical aid or foreign assistance or climate adaptation funds would have the biggest human impact. It helps target interventions much more effectively. And for educators, wow, imagine using these cartograms in a classroom. They could transform really abstract subjects into something visually compelling. It could foster much deeper global awareness, maybe even empathy in students. Journalists, too, could use these ideas to make complex global stories much more understandable, more emotionally resonant for the public, moving beyond just the dry numbers.
Yeah, and just on a personal level, this book really does rewire your mental model of the world. It definitely encourages you to think more critically about the maps and data you see every day. And it kind of fosters a stronger sense of global citizenship, I think. Maybe inspires a bit more empathy, more engagement with those huge global issues like poverty or climate change. It's really hard to unsee what these maps reveal once you've seen them. You know, this deep dive into the Atlas of the Real World really does challenge us. It pushes us to question those geographic assumptions that maybe unconsciously shape how we understand global social reality. The biggest takeaway for me, I think, is just how much visualization techniques matter, how they influence our social and political understanding. Changing how we see the world really can change what we think is possible and maybe what we decide to do about it.
I completely agree. The lasting insight for me is recognizing that there isn't just one right way to see global patterns. There are multiple valid ways. And really understanding complex global challenges means being able to shift between these different geographical viewpoints. It's kind of a paradigm shift, isn't it? Moving away from seeing geography as just fixed physical reality and instead seeing it as a dynamic tool for analyzing human experience. It asks us to be more intellectually flexible, maybe.
So here's a provocative thought for you to chew on this week. What other parts of our world might look drastically different if we decided to map them not by physical space, but by their true human dimension or by their impact? Something to think about. Thanks so much for joining us on this deep dive. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Accatra Foundation.